prayer. Today I was invited to a Facebook group called Vedic Inquirer. Topics related to the healthy social development of ISKCON. And if that title makes sense to you, then this video might be for you, otherwise not really, I think. Well, the discussion, I spent the past few hours reading through. It's quite heavy in the light of, or rather the darkness of, certain recent events. Now, to put it short, the leaders of the ISKCON movement really got theirs. And if they ever read this, well, they should have one or two things to think about. Well, I was, as many of us were most probably, trained since I joined in 78. To especially have respect for the leaders, and especially sannyasis. And especially the gurus. You just didn't criticize them. At least not publicly. Some did, but they were mainly considered, and often rightly so, envious and angry people who took an opportunity to blow off some steam. But I mean, I honestly think we have passed that point. So what I read here today were many comments by many very courageous devotees most very sober and intelligent, but heavy. Well, I just went through a little discussion last week with a devotee who strongly defended the latest convicted abuser dismissing all the accusations against him as just envious slandering campaigns. Well, you got the BBC statement. Statements from senior leaders, one after another. Even sounding a bit apologetic and embarrassed, and as if they didn't really know what to do. You can't keep quiet anymore, it seems. Then okay, write a letter, an official statement, post it on social media, and that's it. Well, it apparently isn't, because it goes deeper than that. And many things are coming up after all these 50 years or whatever. Where senior leaders who have looked the other way when, I mean, very serious and criminal abuse has been going on. They are demanding a bit more than just official statement letters. So I never saw anything like this. In ISKCON ever before. And while some may be shocked by that, saying you're undermining the authority structure of our movement, and I would say today that well, first of all, that authority structure has undermined itself. And to just honestly admit that, see that, speak about that. Maybe the best, if not the only way, to save this movement. I know some would think I'm exaggerating. It's not so bad, is it? Is the general or has been way to try to deal with it, which of course means looking the other way. Now, I remember writing an article on that website Chakra back in the late 90s, suggesting that we reboot ISKCON, reset. Maybe I'll just skip that. Anyway, I am intentionally vague here about the ongoing events because they are being discussed so much by people who know so much more elsewhere. As for me, I used to be around a bit in Mayapur in the late 90s. Heard things and wondered why do the leaders there allow this to go on? I was kind of puzzled. But now, so many pieces of this puzzle fall into place. Any case, I'm not going to dwell on this specific case or that of big swamis or leaders who not only fall down, whatever that means, but who sometimes do some really crazy stuff. Well, I would say, and this is my personal view, that they are the, you could say, tips of the icebergs. The boils rupture and make a mess. But I think that this all reveals something underlying deeper. General error of how we young Westerners especially, but also Indians, took up this bhakti yoga path. So for whatever it's worth, I just wanted to try to talk about that a bit. Because I really think that this big abuse scandals, which, well, are rightly so scandals because they are very serious, may overshadow lots of quieter abusive behavior. That is going on and on. And I think that it's also important to shed a broader light upon all of this. I mean, I wouldn't call it a system error, but well, let me try it. A certain ideal developed early on in ISKCON of what it means to be pure and advanced, fixed up devotee. Now, you would think that it would be about all the Vaishnava qualities of merciful and honesty and tolerance and kindness and being a friend of every living being and so on. But it became about being austere, detached, working very hard, pure in the sense of following a lot of purist principles. Philosophically astute. Good at selling many books on the street or to manage things. And, well, they say that what you reward is what you get, the behavior that people will show. And well, I myself took up that ideal and tried to be an advanced devotee that way. Now, for instance, look at the sannyas ashram in ISKCON. What does it take to become a sannyasi? Well, first of all, you need to be a man. And then, well, good at speaking, giving lectures, leading kirtan. Living in celibacy, and basically shutting off this lowly, dirty human emotions and feelings and desires and all of that. And then you hang around other sannyasis, become part of that gang and just wait. And if you play your cards well, you might end up on that waiting list, and once you get your danda, and that's it. You get showered with uncritical respect, adoration, worship, donations, financial support, food being cooked for you. And a life that is really taken care of by others who act as your servants. It's a very attractive life for man, and all you need to sacrifice is what part of your humanity. Now, I said you get what you reward. And I think that what became rewarded was not kindness and the mercifulness and the honesty and the love, but the toughness, the hardness, a lack of emotion. And then an ideal of purity in all this. That fostered a superiority complex, you could say. Well, I've seen and still see leaders on high and low positions who treat other devotees, especially those working under them, in very callous, insensitive ways. Don't show much empathy at all. Who see themselves as the real devotees, the real carriers of Srila Prabhupada's, Lord Chaitanya's mission, and the what they call sometimes file and rank devotees, being just some lowly workers. But generally stupid. And who the fine leaders are, by their mercy, supposed to somehow push into the right direction, which they know only. And again, I'm not criticizing a specific people here. I don't find this is not the purpose. But I'm trying to point out what I really think has become a disease. And what is that is what has made Iskon sick, not healthy. Therefore, I appreciate this Facebook group, how to make Iskon healthy again. I mean, I could get all a little philosophical even more and suggest that the problem may be that certain impersonalist tendencies crept in and elitism from other religions, purism, and certain Christian or Jewish groups. And, well, you know, an impersonalist, sadhu, what do? Well, they consider the whole world as false and bad, including people here. Relationships we have are unreal too. So austerity, renunciation, detachment, indifference to everything and everyone is all they really have. To go forward on their path. And well, that mentality that, you know, I'm a servant of Krishna, but I don't care about all these lowly neophyte devotees, what to speak of the dirty karmis. I'm up there, I'm up here, and they are down there. Well, that's what you get. That then turns into a lack of empathy, lack of ability to feel for others or identify with the situation of others. Of course, I'm not saying everyone is like that, but there's one thing I find a bit curious. You look here on these groups, Facebook groups and elsewhere, where many devotees, I mean, sincerely are discussing very, very heavy issues. You hardly ever find any ISKCON leaders being involved in the discussions. Some make some official statement, write a letter, publish it somewhere, and that's it. Then when a whole chain of comments follow, some very pertinent and important, they're just quiet. Maybe they think it's below them to come down to this mundane level that these ordinary devotees are. Meeting on. So they rather prefer to do their work in a hidden room somewhere. It may be out of fear of being standing there as just an ordinary devotee. In an open frank discussion, even allowing critique and arguments and whatever feelings others have to come right down on you publicly. Hey, what will my disciples say? They will relativize guru and all that. But then, isn't this, in a way, an act of pretending? Of having to act just as we have seen gurus from India and other religious leaders do over and over again. Acting holy, acting superior, acting mystical, enlightened. Well, just imagine that all the devotees in and around ISKCON or followers of, well, the Gaudiya Sampradaya would just lay down all the titles and positions and costumes and just stand there together, both feet on the ground, no one trying to be superior to anyone else. No one no need to idealize anyone. Here we are, just the way we are. Well, I kind of suggested that as a thought experiment, at least as I do now, back in the late 90s in an article I wrote on the Chakra website. And maybe we should reset ISKCON like that. Everyone stepping down. Just a gang of people who want to serve Krishna. Maybe some would be afraid of that thought because they would say, but where is my guru? I need a guru. A perfect person I can totally trust and follow and give everything to. Well, maybe you won't find that big guru. sitting on that big throne and being perfect. But maybe you will find instead real people who are just what they seem to be. And learn to appreciate each other for that, for the devotion, the wisdom, the enlightenment that we actually have. The mercy, the kindness, the love, the devotion, the honesty. Actual personal qualities that cannot be faked by dress or name or position or title or anything like that. And then find that here is a devotee who I like, who I can trust, who is really my friend, who really cares about me, who I look up to, and who can give me good guidance. That's enough, isn't it? I know this is only a thought experiment, and you will all say that's not possible. But who knows, maybe that's what's happening. Maybe that's what Krishna wants. Sometimes Krishna may put us on a big seat. Sometimes Krishna will take everything away from us, have us walking alone in a big forest, completely lost and only able to find shelter with Krishna. No institution to take care of you. No disciples to give you dakshin, clean your room and cook your food and wash your laundry. Then what are you going to do? Well, what I really wanted to say here is that we need to scrutinize our value system a bit. What is really an advanced devotee? Well, a real devotee is simply a normal person. Right? Because normal life is life with Krishna. in Krishna's world. There's nothing special with that. What's special is the weird life in Maya here. So if you find yourself in a leadership position, learn and repeat the 27 qualities of a Vaishnava. And the qualities of a Brahmana. And practice those towards the people you lead, because we know that the leader, best leader, is the best servant of those that they lead. If the devotees in your house, your temple, are freezing in the winter, because you don't heat it enough in order to save some money, and don't think, they're just complaining. Where's the austerity? Don't they understand they're not the bodies? But rather think, oh, these devotees, they are suffering. I better do something about it. Look, listen, ask, how do you feel? How is it? Is there anything I can do for you? Not, is there anything you can do for me? I mean, maybe I don't need to say all this, but these are mainly my own reflections to clear my own mind. And I've seen that the devotee Vaishnava community has come a long way through the years. Towards this. But there is still in the chambers of the ISKCON temples and projects, those hard, heavy, tough ones. I think that's what it's all about. I'm no sissy. Vaishnava has to sometimes be hard as a thunderbolt. Well, and sometimes soft as a rose. But more importantly, a Vaishnava has a heart of molten gold. Because hard gold is still hard. Right. So again, those with hard hearts will interpret this bhakti life through their filter. To their favor, according to their understanding. But if the movement as such rewards that behavior, what happens? Well, it is that you open the field all the way up to the top for people who are actually psychopath types. And if they aren't, already they may end up in an effective training to become psychopaths. Because a psychopath is a person who thinks about his or her own career or plans, and who lacks the ability to feel for others, who lacks empathy, and who can in fact behave as cruel as anything. Without any remorse or even understanding that there's something wrong with that. So, if you ask me today, I would say, be respectful to all devotees. But if leaders are behaving that way, and we don't need to use the word psychopath, but callous, causing harm to other devotees, whether it is to do outright criminal activities such as physical or mental violence or sexual abuse, or just by exploiting using other devotees, taking advantage of their faithfulness, their humility, mismanaging, even if it is just to make devotee families with their children sit and freeze in their apartments in the winter. Then, those of us who see that going on should speak out, should demand that such people either correct themselves or resign or removed, because then they are not qualified as leaders. Now, some were simply saying in this discussion group that when someone breaks the law, no matter who it is, that way, abusively, just simply call the police. Take them to court, put them in prison. Let the law act. And I agree with that. In certain cases, it is probably the only thing, right thing to do. Not just by declaring a sannyasi fallen and having him dress in white instead of pink. But at the same time, we need to look deeper at what it is that fosters this kind of behavior, that perpetuates it, allows it to go on, covers it over when it goes on. Either by leaders holding each other's back, or by followers allowing it to go on because they're afraid of making offenses or have learned to be humble. That may to some seem like a safe path, right? See nothing evil, say nothing evil, hear nothing evil. But it can also be plain stupid. And even worse, it can mean a passive participation in violence. So I don't know, but it seems to me that what's going on these days can really lead to something good. Cleaning out a whole bunch of anarthas, which have, and that is only to be expected, crept into this movement. We can't just pretend they're not there by declaring everything pure. It doesn't work that way. And to pretend that the person is pure just for upholding a position that is required is in a way violence to that person, because it allows that person to nourish his own anarthas, thinking that it's okay, that he's above it because he's a holy man. Anyway.